I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, America has a moral hypocrisy problem, and I'm having a crisis of conscience about the J6 pardons. Plus, an absolutely disgusting pro-crime bill in Olympia that you have to know about. And take your Nazi comparisons elsewhere. They have no power here. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I might break a few hearts today, but the love fest for Donald Trump is over. Look, here's the reality. I have never done this show while Donald Trump was the president of the United States. I started this show in the first year of the Biden administration. And as you know, to me, one of the most important fundamental responsibilities of anyone in the media, whether they do journalism or opinion, is to hold powerful people accountable. And just because I wanted Donald Trump to be elected doesn't mean that when he's sworn in, as he was yesterday, that all of a sudden I'm going to go easy on him. No, I mean, you hold powerful people accountable. You call balls and strikes. That's why I'm so hard on Democrats in Washington state, because there really aren't any Republicans to hold accountable here. And so they get the bulk of my ire. So we will, from here on out, be as honest as I guess I can be in my opinions about how I feel about the things that Donald Trump is doing. So if you thought this was going to be a pro-Trump, rah-rah-rah show for the next 4 years, like, it's not going to be. Sometimes it might be. Like I said, I voted for him for the first time. I think he's kind of funny. I like a lot of the policies that he's going to push through, and I like some of the executive orders that he signed yesterday, but that doesn't mean that there aren't things that he already has done or might do that I'm unsure about. And with that, I want to talk about the pardons for the J6ers. Look, America absolutely has a hypocrisy problem. We've known this for a long time, but I think the dueling pardons between Biden and Trump just lay that bare for all of us to see. And there is a local angle on this, a Washington state angle, which is why I'm starting the show with it today. Biden has lied repeatedly about, oh, I won't do this, and then he does it. Oh, I won't do this, then he does it. The media criticized Trump. Oh, he might do this. He didn't do it. He might do this. Well, he didn't do it. In fact, Biden did things that you criticized Trump for even thinking about doing. Remember when Trump was leaving office the first time and, oh my God, there was so much hand-wringing about, well, he might issue preemptive pardons for himself, his family, his allies. And he never ended up doing that. You know who did do it? Joe Biden. He issued an awful lot of preemptive pardons. I mean, Adam Schiff, who back when Trump was considering this, said the only one who would take a preemptive pardon is someone who did something wrong. It's like an admission of guilt. Guess who got a preemptive pardon from Biden? Adam Schiff. So, you know, the hypocrisy of the Biden, the lies from the now former president, the hypocrisy from the media and from Democrats who were just like, oh, my God, Donald Trump is going to abuse his pardon authority only for Joe Biden to do it. Like, OK, we see it. Give me a break. The J6 pardons I'm having not a difficult time with, because I think that leading up to, he was very honest about this was something he was probably going to do. So it's not necessarily a surprise. I suppose I'm struggling with the breadth of them and it being this kind of unilateral, didn't seem to be a lot of attention to individual cases thing. More than anything, I guess, and let me just play this clip. This is Biden, Trump, first day in office, deciding that this was going to be one of the very first executive orders that he signed.
First, we have a list of pardons and commutations relating to events that occurred on January 6, 2021.
Okay, and how many people is this?
I think this order will apply to approximately 1,500 people, sir.
So this is January 6th. These are the hostages. Approximately 1,500 for a pardon.
Yes.
Full pardon.
Full pardon or commutations?
Full pardon. We have about 6 commutations in there where we're doing further research. Nice to see you again. So this is a big one. Anything you want to explain about this? We hope they get them. We hope they come out tonight, frankly. They're expecting it. approximately 1,500 people. Six commutations.
Yeah, and some of them did get out last night. Again, very sweeping. Some commutations, he said, we're still looking into whether it would be a full pardon. What's the difference, in case you don't know? A pardon is like it never happened. I mean, on the internet it happened, but in terms of your criminal record, et cetera, wiped clean. A commutation is, hey, we're going to let you out of prison early, but this is still going to be on your record. So whether he's going to go back and change some of those. Now, I had said when Trump started floating, well, first of all, when it became obvious that Trump was probably going to win the presidency again, and then when he became more vocal about wanting to pardon the J6ers, what did I say at the time? As long as you don't pardon people who assaulted police officers, I would be absolutely the biggest moral hypocrite on the planet if I celebrated Donald Trump pardoning people who assaulted police officers. And there's no doubt that police officers were assaulted at our nation's capital on January 6th. There is no doubt in the world. So that's generally how I feel about this. And there are individuals who were pardoned yesterday by Donald Trump who assaulted police officers on January 6th. There are multiple individuals who did that. Now, that being said, as I go through, and I'm just going to be totally transparent about my thought process here, because I really believe this issue of moral hypocrisy, depending on which party did it, is poisoning our country. I mean, can you go back to that picture, Nicole? If this was an image of BLM rioters assaulting police officers, knocking down an American flag at our nation's capital, do you believe the right would celebrate their pardons? If the situation was exactly as it is, and you had a Democratic president who came in and pardoned 1,500 BLM rioters, some of whom assaulted police officers, do you think for one second there'd be a single conservative celebrating that? No. But with this caveat, when it comes to moral hypocrisy, in this country, far left extremists are hardly ever held accountable for that kind of behavior. I have watched dozens, if not hundreds, of individual instances of police officers being assaulted, sometimes severely, just in the city of Seattle, in the 15 years I've been here covering the news. In most of those instances, there was never any sort of arrest, prosecution, certainly not federal prosecution, where people ended up in federal prison. I could count on one hand of the dozens and dozens and dozens of violent riots I've covered, been in the middle of, been assaulted during myself, the actual times that the federal government sent someone to prison for a violent act. The ones I can think of are the few people who were caught by the feds after burning cop cars in the streets of Seattle in the summer of 2020. And then I think a couple of the ones who stole police rifles out of those burning cop cars. So that is the difference and the frustration here. It doesn't make it right. So there's also some nuance here, and I want to focus on Washington State. There's about 30 people from Washington State who were either already sentenced and serving time or who had pending cases related to January 6th, most, if not all of whom, we believe, were just given pardons by Donald Trump. I was comparing the names against the list. There were a couple who were missing that I thought that could just be an oversight or something. So most of, if not all of, the 30 or so people from Washington State who participated in January 6th in some form or fashion, getting pardons from Donald Trump. Some of them are in prison, so they'll be released from prison. Some, you know, reach deals and they're not in prison right now, so they just get a pardon, so it's wiped from their record. But as I look at the individual cases, I cannot help but compare their alleged or convicted actions to actions I have seen with my own eyes from Antifa, Black Bloc types, BLM rioters many times over the years, and then compare what the prosecutions or investigations were like compared to the prosecutions, investigations, and sentences for these January 6th participants. Just a couple examples, and these are people whose names are on the list of pardons slash commutations. I'll get to the commutation bit in a second. From Washington State, that Donald Trump issued yesterday. Let's see here. So there's a Taylor Jonatkis from Kingston. He got 7 years in prison for obstruction of an official proceeding, civil disorder, and assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers. I didn't see anything in there. Again, that's assaulting, resisting, or impeding certain officers, not all of the above. And from what I read, he essentially led rioters with a megaphone, and they say he was kind of one of the leaders who were leading the mob to the doorsteps of the Capitol and instructing the mob to push past officers, etc. 7 years. Now, if he didn't actually assault a police officer, you're talking about someone with a megaphone kind of inciting the crowd, etc. Can you think of one time where that behavior during left-wing riots in Seattle has resulted in a 7-year prison sentence? If there is one that I do not know of, please tell me. Mark Anthony Brew of Vancouver, he got 5 years for obstruction, civil disorder, and multiple misdemeanors. My understanding is he was harassing Capitol Police. He pushed them and took selfies inside the building. I have seen many, many instances. At this point, I'm basically a professional protest coverer of far-left extremists in Seattle who have pushed against police lines and done far worse to police and never got arrested, let alone got 5 years in a federal prison. I just picked another one out of random. Tucker Weston of Linwood. He got 2 years in prison for removing a metal barricade from around the Capitol and shoving police with a bike rack. Again, shouldn't have done it. Shouldn't be assaulting police officers. Shouldn't be shoving police officers. 2 years in federal prison for that. I mean, I could go on and on. There was a guy who got 45 days in prison and 12 months supervised release for entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds in 2023. I think I cannot help but compare that to the Summer of Love in Seattle and the people who took over 6 square blocks of the city and dubbed it an autonomous zone and patrolled it with high-powered rifles that were handed to them out of the trunk of a car. And what, 99.9999999% of them never faced any consequences at all for their actions? The people who looted buildings downtown, some of whom participated in lighting cop cars on fire, the people who harassed and mobbed my crew, we had to seek refuge in a fire station. I don't even know to what extent there was a true investigative effort to get to the bottom of and identify all of those people who engaged in that kind of behavior. And also 2 years or 45 days in prison for this is Dennis Adams from Tacoma for entering and remaining in a restricted building or grounds. How many times have the pro-Palestine crowds taken over the Capitol Rotunda and been arrested? Because they were, right, at the end of this, they were actually arrested. You think they got 45 days of incarceration? Hell no. So there's this issue of, like, I don't want... So there's a couple things here. You can see why I'm struggling with this. Because when you compare it to the lack of any sort of real punishment for far-left domestic violent extremists, terrorists, there's no comparison at all. I mean, they found 1,500 people who Trump pardoned, 1,500 people. Not all of those were violent, assaulted officers. And again, I said, if you assaulted a police officer on January 6th, you belong in federal prison. But there's no denying that there is a serious imbalance of justice when it comes to how aggressively the federal government prosecuted those cases versus the 6 months prior to that when far-left extremists were burning down American cities and the virtual lack of prosecution for what happened. So that is one of the predominant issues. Now, that being said, I don't think that Donald Trump should have pardoned anyone who laid a hand on a police officer. I think he could have commuted their sentences. I don't think you should get your record wiped clean if you assaulted a police officer. You know, commute their sentences if they were above and beyond. For instance, the guy who got 7 years. Nicole and I have talked about murder cases on this show where someone wasn't even sentenced to 7 years in Washington State. And it's because, I mean, we literally talked, we're actually going to talk about this case later in the show today, but Josh Ellis in Tacoma, who shot his estranged girlfriend in the back of the head and left her for dead, her body to just rot. And prosecutors offered him 10 years, which would have been 7 years after good time. And why did they do that? In part because the defense attorney argued because of the color of his skin. He was black. The system, they should do this in the interest of racial justice. So Democrats want to help murderers get low sentences and get out of prison. Another thing we're going to talk about coming up in our next segment. But they want the absolute book thrown at the J6ers. You see the moral hypocrisy problem we're having here? But for Donald Trump, you're setting a terrible precedent by pardoning people who assaulted police officers, because it goes entirely against the law and order thing. Don't pardon them if they got excessive sentences compared to what other people who committed acts of political violence have gotten, then commute their sentence. Send them back to their home state of Washington or wherever else they're from with a federal conviction for assaulting a law enforcement officer. That will stay with them. That will be a punishment for the rest of their lives, a punishment they should have. But don't pardon them. And look, Biden pardoned a guy who was convicted in a killing of two FBI agents the other day. So again, no one's clean in this. But if we can't take our political lenses off enough and long enough to see the moral hypocrisy and to set a moral standard and a moral compass for ourselves and not shift it depending on what political party it advantages, then like, what good are we? If your moral compass isn't something you value, I don't know. So it's such a complicated issue. I also want to note Ethan Nordine. He's from Washington State, and he is not only one of the individuals who got a commutation so far, could turn into a pardon, but he's been sort of one of the centerpieces of the J6 investigation. He's from Auburn. He was the leader of Seattle's Proud Boys chapter. This is from KOW. According to court records, social media posts show he and other members of the far-right group planned to overwhelm police barricades during the Capitol attack. In 2023, a federal jury in D.C. convicted Nordine and three other Proud Boys of seditious conspiracy. Nordine was later sentenced to 18 years in federal prison, one of the longest sentences of any Capitol rioter. I think there was a guy there who got the longest sentence who didn't even go to D.C., who wasn't even in D.C. for January 6th. So, like, look, I don't know Ethan Nordine. I will be honest, I don't know the extent of the communications and the planning and whether it really warranted seditious conspiracy. I do know this, when they're talking about he planned this, he orchestrated it to overwhelm police at the Capitol. How many planned, orchestrated, violent riots in Seattle have happened where no one, I mean, look at Antifa. We talk about this all the time. They won't even acknowledge that Antifa exists. Like, the Proud Boys exist, but on the flip side of the Proud Boys is Antifa, an actual entity that people identify with, that strategize and organize to carry out mass acts of violent resistance very frequently in Seattle, in Portland. The feds aren't building some sort of case against them for conspiracy, for racketeering, whatever it is. They won't even acknowledge their existence. And you're sending Ethan Nordine to prison for 18 years for something that you look the other way on when it comes to protests and riots here? And people might say, yeah, but this had to do with, you know, the presidential election being certified. It was about, you know, our country and our democracy and all. You can find any excuse in the world that you want for it. You can find any excuse in the world to justify the lengthy sentences given to J6ers and the absolute refusal to even really properly investigate, charge, prosecute, charge, convict left-wing rioters. And I don't care. I will see 1,000 excuses on the internet. There's no excuse for it. It's one of the main things that red-pilled me. I have a story coming out on my Patreon and Locals pages later today, kind of about, you know, my turnaround on Donald Trump. And the weird thing about it, after all those years of disliking Donald Trump so much, one of the things that started the gears moving in my head was January 6th. You would think that if I already didn't like Trump, that January 6th would have sort of solidified that or deepened my disdain for it. But because of my experience covering riots in Seattle, it started to wake me up to the true hypocrisy of Democrats and of the media. Like, we watched politicians in Seattle for 6 months not just ignore and downplay, but actively support the criminal unrest happening on our streets. They were on the front lines of it. Then Councilwoman Tammy Morales came out and said, I don't want to hear our constituents told that looting doesn't solve anything. Jenny Durkan, the mayor at the time, called it the summer of love. And then all of a sudden, January 6th happens, and it was horrible. What an embarrassing day for our country. But then I hear all these Democrats, Bob Ferguson, who didn't have jack to say about what had been happening on our streets for the last 6 months, all of a sudden, oh my God, political violence has no place in our country, has no place in our country, but apparently it's perfectly fine on the streets of Seattle. So again, you know, so much of what is wrong with the country and the political system and the two parties stems from deep moral hypocrisy and too many people not being willing to be introspective, to be self-aware and understand that they might have a moral hypocrisy problem too. So yeah, sure. Look, commute some sentences of the J6ers, pardon ones whose maybe only crime was entering the Capitol, something pro-Hamas demonstrators have done a bajillion times, but disappointed in full pardons, clean slate for people who would lay their hands on a member of law enforcement. You could have given them commutations. I would have felt a little bit differently about it. But also, let's recognize that there are absolutely two standards of justice. I have a story coming up today. It's going to be a segment coming up that illustrates that perfectly. At a time when Democrats in our state are, oh my God, pardons for the J6ers today. Today in Olympia, they're actively working to reduce punishments for violent criminals. Even violent criminals who use a gun. Even violent criminals who act with sexual motivation. Even violent criminals who recruit minors to commit crimes on their behalf. That's what Democrats in Olympia are doing today while they're hand-wringing over pardons for the J6ers. Give me a break. Just wild. All right, I want to talk about one more of Trump's executive orders today. You know, as some of these unfold, like the immigration orders and the impact on our state, we'll talk about some of those. But this one, again, has a nexus to Washington state. So as you know, Trump came out. I keep saying Trump and Biden. I can't get used to President Trump. Trump came out and one of his executive orders was to end birthright citizenship. Now, my father had birthright citizenship to the United States. I don't know if he's the greatest example because, like, he really kind of was a drain on society. Like, I don't know if he ever paid taxes. And then he ended up dying homeless in Canada. So, I mean, you know. But his birthright citizenship was because he lived on a border town. And his mother went to a hospital in the United States to actually give birth to him right over the border. So he had birthright citizenship. But Trump believes that birthright citizenship is being abused, that you have people who come here. If you come here on a tourist visa, which this is sort of a thing that happens, like in some European countries, women will come here 8.5 months pregnant on a tourist visa or whatever it is to have their baby here. They call it an anchor baby thing. You know, so this, first of all, I don't think it's constitutional. I don't think what Trump has put forth is constitutional. And I would prefer if we didn't throw around executive orders that were blatantly against the Constitution. The 14th Amendment spells this out very clearly. It was brought forth because of slavery, making sure that slaves could become U.S. citizens. Essentially, it reads, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. I don't really see a way around that. And I've often said about people who attack certain amendments to the Constitution, like the Second Amendment, if you want to change it, if you don't like it, there's a process to go about changing it, and it's not executive order. Like, if you really, the Second Amendment, most Americans in most states want to do away with the Second Amendment. Our founding fathers predicted that these things might come up as history, as time evolved and all of this. There's a way to do it. It's really difficult. But if that's the public desire, you can do it. And I would say that with this, too. I mean, ending birthright citizenship, which is codified in the 14th Amendment, is not something that Donald Trump is going to be able to do via executive order. So it's not a surprise at all that states would sue over it. I'm just disappointed, I guess, that our state once again has to lead the charge against the Trump administration. So Nick Brown, the new attorney general, a week on the job, remember we had him here. We talked to him about former Attorney General Bob Ferguson's obsession with Donald Trump. how he spent 4 years of his term suing Donald Trump for everything under the sun, like dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times. I remember asking him, like, you know, we've got problems here. We've got crises here. Are you going to, just like your predecessor, get caught up in all this Donald Trump stuff? And he sort of, you know, suggested that he was going to be a more reasonable attorney general. Well, here he is this morning, 1 hour ago, announcing that Washington State will be suing the Trump administration over the executive order to end birthright citizenship.
The president's executive order claiming to end birthright citizenship in the United States is plainly and obviously illegal. Washington State will not abide by such harmful and unjust action. On Monday, one man, the president, said that the citizenship of millions of Americans born to immigrants in this country means less. We all recognize that the president began his political career in large part by inciting fear and hatred against immigrant communities. Now he wants to redefine American citizenship altogether. But he cannot. Birthright citizenship makes clear that citizenship cannot be conditioned on one's race, ethnicity, or where their parents came from. What's not in the Constitution is anything saying the president has the authority to decide who is granted citizenship. Generations of policymakers and lawmakers in this country, from the Supreme Court to Congress, and until now the executive branch, have upheld this right throughout our history. The president's executive order would deny citizenship to 150,000 newborn children each year in the United States. That's thousands of people born here in Washington who would be denied the key to full participation and opportunity in American society. It would render them undocumented at birth. It could even render them the citizens of no country at all. That's why we filed suit today and are challenging the president's unconstitutional actions.
Now, look, I don't like it. I do agree with his, I mean, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I am a constitutionalist, and I believe firmly that we have to protect the amendments or go about changing them the correct way as our founding fathers intended. I believe that he's right on the legal side of things. I know that people are trying to, you know, mince words with all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, saying, oh, they're citizens of other countries, so they're not subject to our jurisdiction. No, everyone in our country is subject to our jurisdiction. That's why even if you're an illegal immigrant and you commit a crime here, we can put you in an American prison because you are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So I don't see, I don't know. I mean, I agree that birthright citizenship is being abused. 100%. I 100% believe people are coming here on tourist visas to have a baby, because when the baby's an American citizen, their parents can become an American citizen. And you have illegal immigrants who are coming here having children who are then Americans. They came here illegally, and now they're seeking to benefit off that. I mean, they're basically using children, using little babies to try to become citizens of the United States. So I wish there was a way, and actually, there is kind of a way to stop the abuse of that. Is you have to stop the immigration crisis. I mean, Donald Trump has shut down the southern border. So if you've got fewer people who are able to come here illegally, you've got fewer people who can be here illegally popping out babies that then become U.S. citizens. So in that sense, you could reduce the number of people who are using this sort of anchor baby strategy, if you will. So look, like, I think Nick Brown is correct on the merits. I don't like anyone playing fast and loose with the Constitution, even if it's someone who I voted for. The same way I don't like the Democrats here playing fast and loose with the Second Amendment. I make a living off the First Amendment. I don't want the government playing fast and loose with it. But here's the thing. Can you let another freaking state do it? There are already, 14 states as of this morning who want to sue over this? States that have far fewer active crises than we have here. Like, we got a lot of shit going on. This was the problem with Bob Ferguson. He was perfectly content allowing the murder rate to double under his watch, focusing on all these, you know, gun control policies that didn't do anything to help the murder rate or shootings or anything like that. And then virtue signaling over Donald Trump while we had all these other problems, getting completely lost in the sauce on his TDS. And now Nick Brown, his first week on the job, is clearly going to get lost in the sauce as well. Despite all the other things he could be focusing his time and energy on. I mean, gosh, work with Donald Trump to track down and to hold drug cartel accountable who are killing countless people on our streets. That's something that you could look into. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. All of these things, and he has to. And it's because Washington has to be first and out front. It's for attention. I hate to say it. It is for attention. That's why Bob Ferguson was always, always, anytime, anything, Trump, press conference, I've got to be out in front of this. He was all making the national news circuits. And just all the while forgetting everything happening in Washington State. And this tells me that Nick Brown is just going to be the same. They put out a statement before they announced this lawsuit this morning, suggesting that it's probably not the only thing they're going to sue over. We're prepared and committed to using the full power of the Attorney General's office to enforce Washington's laws, to protect people's rights, and to keep Washingtonians safe. We will uphold the law and we will fight when called upon for our shared values. That pisses me off. What does that mean, for our shared values? Whose shared values? For the values of only the people who elected you, I guess. Like, that's not my shared values. Fighting tooth and nail against the Trump administration isn't my value. I hate that. They always use that. Progressives always use that phrase. Our shared values. As if Washington State is a complete monolith. There's no one who dissents, no one who voted for Donald Trump, no one who cares about or supports these immigration policies. It's like, no, those are your values. And you were elected. That's fair, right? But don't call it our shared values. So look, we're going to enter 4 more years of TDS. And you know what? Fine. If that's what Bob Ferguson in the governor's office and Nick Brown in the attorney general's office want to do for 4 years, while the homeless crisis gets worse, the crime crisis gets worse, the drug crisis gets worse, everything else gets worse, fine. Like I already said this, send us down to San Francisco levels of despair and we'll just try again in 2028 and see if we can't put the state in a better direction. For the love of God. Now, one thing I will note that now I'm getting some slight joy out of. So Nick Brown's already angry at Bob Ferguson. Did you see this? So Nick Brown and Nicole, is your mic working? We were having a little issue before the show.
I think it is.
Oh, it is. Yay. Thank God. You saw my ordeal with Daryl yesterday.
I did. I was watching.
The racist camera wouldn't see Daryl's face. Oh, looks like it sees Nicole's just fine. Although I don't know if it's really. Yeah. It sees you.
Yeah, things have moved around a little bit, but yeah, it sees me.
I'm looking forward to talking to you later on about your trip to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it was exciting.
Again, there's no fangirling over Trump on the show anymore. That was reserved for trying to help get him in office and, you know, all that. Not that we helped get him in office.
Right.
Well, but we can be excited.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Fine.
I said I wish I was excited over something as much as Gina, who I took. Or yes. Who we kind of took with us.
Yeah, we played that clip you sent us anyway. On the show yesterday.
But I wish I was that excited about anything. I love it. I love the passion and the excitement. Yeah. I just think it makes life more fun.
Well, and one of the things I said yesterday, I know we have some clips coming up on the show, is like, I felt bad for the people who weren't having fun yesterday. Trump was having a blast. And I'm like, man, I feel bad if somebody's sitting there watching that like, ah. It's like, because they're having so much fun and it's fine. America deserves to have fun now and then.
We do. That's what Dorian, I used to say, sitting in the studio because it was a bit of a hostile territory over at Cairo Radio. Yeah. And when we were reporting on Trump before and everybody outside would just be looking at the screens, getting mad. And Dorian and I were like, see, I wish they found it as fun life is too short to be angry about words.
Yeah. Life is better when you find things fun, as long as it's not dangerous, etc.
Exactly.
But we will, like I said, and I know Nicole supports this as well, we'll call balls and strikes. We always do. As I told Dave Reichert when I supported his campaign for governor, you know if you win, I'm going to be hard on you, right? That's the job. If we can't do that, then we shouldn't be doing the job. So just like now, I'm going to have to be hard on Bob Ferguson. Oh, drat. However will I find ways to criticize Bob Ferguson?
We're supportive, but I don't think we've ever been in the fangirl category. I think Gina's a fangirl.
Yeah, no. I think that when I first came around to Trump after the first, well, it was a couple weeks before the first assassination attempt. Yeah, supportive because that was the only path forward for the country that made any sense whatsoever. And so now that we're there, I want him to buckle down. It seems like he's doing that. Mm-hmm. I want the sort of retribution bend to calm down a little bit. I think there's some things he needs to do that he should do, like he revoked security clearances for officials who lied about the Hunter Biden laptop story. I think that's a good idea. I don't want people with that high of security clearances lying about things that are that important that impact an election. But for instance, what I don't want is Republicans in Congress now, it's like the war of the hearings and the committees. Now we're going to investigate you. Now we're going to investigate you. It's like, no, just get shit done. Like, let's put some of this to bed, be the bigger people, pursue the Trump agenda for 4 years, make America awesome, and then put another strong Republican back in the White House in 4 years. But don't be like unhinged with a desire for retribution, focusing on the wrongs of the past. You have so much to do, clearly. Let's get it done. Let's see what it does for the country.
Right. And I think when it, you know, nobody ever agrees with somebody 100%. It just doesn't happen. Married people don't agree with each other 100% of the time.
My husband agrees with me 100%.
I know that is actually not correct.
Oh, I just snort choked. Okay, go ahead.
But so I think when people say, when you say you support Trump, people take that as you support absolutely everything he says, right, and does. And that's not true. Nobody does.
No.
But yeah, so hopefully he just kind of gets it together. I've seen some language that I don't like, and I've seen some things that I do like, you know, coming out of him the last 24 hours or so, even with some of his response to a priest that gave this funny sermon right in front of her. I don't have now, but then he was asked about it after, and he's like, well, what do you think about it? Like, to the reporter. Mm-hmm. So the reporter said, what do you think about the priest doing that? And he said, well, what do you think about it?
Yep.
So it's kind of turning people back on themselves, turning these reporters, wanting them to come up with something that's interesting instead of always him having to, you know, give them material. And so maybe that'll go somewhere. I don't know.
I hope so. I hope he's just confident that the American people sent him back because of his agenda. I mean, all these executive orders, some of them I don't think are good or necessarily constitutional. And we'll find out. All of those will be sorted out. And yeah, I mean, that's all we can promise, is to call balls and strikes and not to let political ideology or preferences get in the way of that. So, okay, I'm going to continue on with Nick Brown and Bob Ferguson beef. We'll hear about Nicole's trip to the inauguration that went sideways because of cold weather. But this is interesting. So remember Bob Ferguson, now the governor who's fiscal conservative all of a sudden, he comes out like the savior. Oh my gosh, I'm so moderate. I'm so fiscally conservative. And he came out, he said he's going to cut, he was recommending like a 6% cut across state agencies, which would be a $4 billion budget deficit. And then he had some other cost savings ideas.
One thing we'll be doing is looking at different agencies, right, and parts of state government to see if there are funds that can be swept, that can be better utilized for other purposes, right? So, for example, I'm leading with my own office, the AG's office. I'm sweeping $35 million from a fund that I helped create that does our work on affirmative litigation. We're sweeping $35 million from that, putting into making these investments. The AG's office will be fine. You know, I've talked to Nick Brown about it, right? They're going to be fine,
have
right?
I want
to be clear. But hey, I'm sure Nick's not excited about it, but they can still function their core mission, right? They still have the resources to do that, but that'll be something we're looking at across agencies. That's an example in the document that I put out today.
So he says that, and this was like a few weeks ago, we played that clip on the show, and at the time mentioned, like, that's so rich. This is a guy who, I want to say he quadrupled the number of attorneys, like doubled the full staff of his office, obviously absolutely spiked the budget. And now, like, that was 2 weeks left on the job. He's like, I'm going to help save money by sweeping money from the AG's budget. So, like, sweeping means just taking money from the AG as he's out the door. So, yeah, he couldn't do that when he was there. He bloated it to oblivion. And then he's like, well, I'm out the door soon, so I'm going to sweep it. And he's going to act like the hero. The Seattle Times actually pointed this out, and I'll give credit to the Seattle Times on this. They said Ferguson's budget plan refers to that money as excess fund balances, a contrast to how he protected the funds when he ran the office. During Ferguson's 3 terms, his office more than quadrupled the number of attorneys. It's like, how convenient. Oh, now that I'm not there anymore, that's excess funds. And yeah, as he predicted, Nick Brown isn't happy about it. Not at all, which I think is interesting that he's already kind of speaking out against his predecessor and someone he's very aligned with politically and had the support. He told the Seattle Times, it certainly is something that we oppose. That is money that directly impacts our ability to take on civil rights cases, antitrust cases, that protects both your average Washingtonians and some of our most vulnerable populations. So he's pieced all this together. He's mad, you know, oh, you're taking money from us. And meanwhile, he stands up today, they're going to sue the Trump administration when 14 other states are lining up to do just that. Like, hey, you just had $35 million swept from your budget. Maybe now is the time to focus on these things you say are so important, taking on civil rights cases, antitrust cases, protecting average Washingtonians and our vulnerable populations. Maybe focus on in-state stuff. Other states have the whole birthright citizenship thing handled. So I don't feel bad for either of them. I mean, Bob Ferguson is such a phony. Oh, I bloat the size of my office, but now I'm the big guy who's going to come in and cut things for someone else who's taken over the office. Then Nick Brown wants to complain about these millions of dollars being taken away. Well, he's going to go, you know, full TDS on the Trump administration. I just can't. You know, I think we're going to have a lot of material for the next 4 years. I'm not worried about a slow news day.
I know we are.
I haven't had a slow news day since 2015. I don't know what that looks like. I genuinely do not. All right, I got to get serious because I will tell you, was sick to my stomach leading up to the show, putting together our next segment for you. The audacity of some of these Democrats in Olympia to try to take it soft on criminals is, honestly, it'll make you sick. So we'll discuss that coming up next. First, I just wanted to give you a couple more reminders. Natchez RV Resort is having a new phase of their grand opening. This weekend, it's happening the 25th and the 26th. So you can schedule your showing right now, natchezrvresort.com. And the awesome thing about these lots they're opening, these are going to be the best ones on their property. So they have 25 premium extra large RV lots starting in the low 70s. But there's nothing that's going to be developed behind them. So you'll have definitely a sense of privacy that some of the other lots aren't going to have. So these are the, if you've been thinking about it, these are the ones you want to see for sure. And they've got, gosh, so much to see that's fairly new. Their 4,300 square foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, tons of space for entertaining if you've got family that comes to visit. Their saltwater pool, their hot tub are now open. So schedule your showing for this weekend. NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. I had really hoped that given the crime crisis, given really the results of the election nationally, where Republicans saw gains campaigning on law and order issues, I had really hoped that Democrats would not spend this legislative session pushing pro-criminal policies. But I was wrong. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, so there was a hearing that happened on Monday in the House Community Safety Committee. And they were looking at three different bills, all of them pro-criminal bills. Not a lot of care or concern for victims of crime, not a lot of care or concern for the crime crisis that we have on our hands. And I could play you a bunch of cuts, but honestly, I just want to play this one cut of a woman who testified in favor of one of the bills that illustrates to you essentially what the entire hearing was like.
Allowing sentencing reviews for emerging adults acknowledges their inherent potential for growth and transformation. It aligns with our current understandings of brain development and criminological research and reflects that Washington values redemption founded on science over retribution cloaked in implicit bias and would be a significant step in towards eradicating systemic racism in our criminal legal system.
Yeah, so it's retribution. To want to put violent criminals in prison, to give them appropriate sentences, even if they're juveniles, this is just retribution. And it's racist and it's implicit bias and all of these things. I mean, that language was dripping throughout the entire hearing. And I have to say, as a, you know, as someone who crime is right at the top of my list, I would say is one or two at the top of my list, it's heartbreaking to watch victims be so underrepresented, so sort of tossed aside in the conversation about criminal justice reforms. You know, the ranking Republican on that committee is Representative Jenny Graham, whose sister was killed by the Green River Killer. And so certainly that's someone who I want on the Community Safety Committee, who I know is going to advocate for crime victims. And I'm sure that Representative Graham would not mind me sharing with you that she called me pretty upset yesterday. And really what she was upset about is, again, what she saw and what anyone who watches the hearing would see as a lack of care for victims and a lack of consideration for victims. And after I talked to her, I then went back and watched the hearing because I hadn't seen it on Monday. I mean, obviously it was inauguration day, and so there were other things going on. And I'm really glad she gave me a call because I will say right now, I think this is the most troublesome bill this entire session that I've seen so far. And there's a lot of doozies because it shows an unwillingness to use common sense. It shows how extreme Washington's Democratic Party has become. And it shows, make no mistake, that they are interested in putting criminals, even violent, horrible criminals, ahead of law-abiding Washingtonians. This is truly, I think, the worst bill so far that I've seen. So I want to, I'm going to read part of it, but I want to play in part of the committee hearing that I think really helps illustrate how bad it is. So this is House Bill 1178. I want you to remember that number. I want you to do your own research into this bill as well. I want you to go read it. House Bill 1178. And it has to do with sentencing enhancements. And I think one of the really troublesome things about this bill is it is being spearheaded by Representative Roger Goodman, who's the chair of the Public Safety Committee. So you have the chair of the Public Safety Committee, a committee that we're supposed to believe is keeping us safe, introducing such a crazy bill. So what it does is it looks at altering sentencing enhancements. So under Washington state law, obviously you have sort of the standards for sentencings for various crimes, but there are certain crimes that are considered, you know, maybe more egregious, more problematic in the way that they were committed, that there's enhancements that can go along with them. For instance, if you use a gun in the commission of a crime, you can get a mandatory firearm enhancement of 5 years. Because in this state, we take gun crime seriously, right? So yeah, you use a gun to hurt someone, not only are you getting sentenced for the underlying crime, whether it's an armed robbery or a drive-by shooting, you could also get, and you should also get, a mandatory firearm enhancement. And that's the way that our state law and our state, I guess, is sending a message to people who actually use guns to commit crimes. Like, hey, we're going to tag an extra 5 years onto your sentence just for doing it, just for doing your crime with a gun. And by the way, you can't get any good time on that 5 years. You're going to have to serve every day of those 5 years. And you're going to serve it concurrently to your sentence for the crime you committed. So let's say you got 15 years for an armed robbery, which probably isn't happening in the state anymore. Get that, and then tagged onto the back of that, 5 more years for the firearm enhancement. Not concurrently. So we have those sorts of enhancements built into law. What this bill does, House Bill 1178, and we're going to get in the weeds here, but I promise you, it will make you sick to your stomach, what I'm about to share with you, that has gone, I think, pretty unnoticed in the media. So what the bill does is it alters the sentencing enhancements that are already on the books. So this isn't a new law, it modifies existing law. So the laws that have all the sentencing enhancements, it's basically taken pen through some of them, eliminating certain sentencing enhancements, easing punishments for certain sentencing enhancements, allowing certain sentencing enhancements to have good time so you don't have to serve the entire enhancement. I'm going to play you a 2-minute clip. So this is staff in the Public Safety Committee that's explaining, first you'll hear her explain existing law. And then at the back end, she'll explain how House Bill 1178 modifies existing law around sentencing enhancements.
I have brought this bill forward. I will ask staff to provide a brief summary.
Good afternoon, committee members. Again, for the record, Michelle Rusk, staff to this committee. Before you is House Bill 1178 concerning sentencing enhancements. For your background, sentences for most felony offenses are determined by reference to a sentencing grid, which provides a standard range of months of confinement. Additional sentencing policies may increase or decrease that sentence, including most relevant here, sentencing enhancements. Washington law provides for different types of sentencing enhancements, which add varying time to a term of total confinement, depending on factors including the felony classification of the offense and the number of specified prior offenses. While sentences for multiple criminal offenses are generally served concurrently, it is mandatory that certain sentencing enhancements must be served consecutively, which is referred to as stacking. The portion of a sentence attributed to the enhancement must be served in total confinement, is not eligible for partial release, and may not be reduced by earned release time. Relevant enhancements include those for committing an offense with a firearm or deadly weapon, impaired driving enhancements, which add time to a sentence for specified driving offenses while under the influence of alcohol or drugs, based on the number of a person's prior offenses or if a passenger under the age of 16 was in the defendant's vehicle. Sexual motivation enhancements, which add additional time when an offense was committed and one of the purposes was for sexual gratification. Controlled substances violation enhancements, which add time for an offense involving specified controlled substances violations and either involved manufacture of methamphetamine in the presence of a minor or was committed in a protected zone, and sentencing enhancements for involving a minor in a criminal street gang-related felony, which is described in greater depth in the bill analysis. Turning to the bill before you, two sentencing enhancements are eliminated: the enhancement for certain controlled substances violations committed in protected zones, and the enhancement for involving a minor in a criminal street gang-related felony. mandatory stacking is eliminated for firearms and deadly weapons enhancements, and enhancements for controlled substances violations related to manufacture of methamphetamine in the presence of a minor. The following sentencing enhancements are eligible for partial confinement and earned early release, including those for firearms and deadly weapons, impaired driving, and sexual motivation.
So that was a lot. I want to break that apart bit by bit so you can understand how truly disgusting it is. How truly disgusting it is that you have lawmakers in Olympia who would dedicate time this session to trying to ease punishments for some of the worst criminal offenders in the state. So again, you've got the enhancements that exist in state law. You commit a certain kind of crime, there's an enhancement for that because we take it very seriously and we want to send a message, gun crimes or whatever. So again, she describes the enhancements in existing law that will be eliminated.
Turning to the bill before you, two sentencing enhancements are eliminated: the enhancement for certain controlled substances violations committed in protected zones, and the enhancement for involving a minor in a criminal street gang-related felony.
Think of the crime crisis we have with juveniles, the gang crisis we have with juveniles. They want to, if you are an adult gang member and you recruit a juvenile, a kid, to be engaged in your criminal conduct, they want to take away the enhancement that under law today you face for doing that. How many times have we seen that? Where you've got a group of gang members arrested for something, and the youngest one of them is the one who committed the most serious aspect of the crime. And we've said it on the show. The older gang members do that on purpose because they tell them, you'll get out on your 21st birthday if you're caught. You won't get caught, but if you are, they'll set you free. In Washington State, they're not going to hold you accountable. So they'll have them commit the worst aspect of the crime at a young age. That's such dangerous predatory behavior that you would not only pull this young person into a life of crime, but you would convince them to commit crimes on your behalf as a gang member. And the state of Washington Democrats in the Public Safety Committee want to take away the enhancement that gang member would face for doing that. That's nuts. That is a sick and twisted way of thinking that I cannot understand. So not only do they want to take it easy on juvenile gang members, but they want to take it easy on adult gang members who recruit the juvenile gang members. How is that going to solve anything? And then again, these are the enhancements where there will no longer be mandatory stacking, meaning if you have more than one enhancement, you would have had to, under the law, it would be stacked. So you're going to serve both of those. Oh, no longer mandatory.
Mandatory stacking is eliminated for firearms and deadly weapons enhancements, and enhancements for controlled substances violations related to manufacture of methamphetamine in the presence of a minor.
They singled that out. In a state that cares so much about gun violence, no more mandatory stacking of firearm enhancements, and no more mandatory... That second one. If you're manufacturing meth in the presence of a minor, Democrats in Olympia are crafting a bill that will make sure that your enhancements for that aren't as bad. Who seeks that out and singles that out and says, hey, we've got the sentencing enhancement where if you're making meth and a kid's present, like, you know, you get a little more time in prison. Let's make sure that's not a mandatory stacking enhancement. Again, this is nuts stuff. And then they also changed, as you heard her say, the enhancements that you can get. Remember, right now, like firearm enhancement, that's 5 years solid. You're not getting a day of good time that's earned on that time. They want to change that for a few crimes.
The following sentencing enhancements are eligible for partial confinement and earned early release, including those for firearms and deadly weapons, impaired driving, and sexual motivation.
Sexual motivation enhancement. They are seeking out the sexual motivation enhancement so that if that's added to your sentence, you can earn good time on it. Oh, you were, no matter that you're a sexual predator, you earned good time on that sexual motivation enhancement. Again, I mean, this is insane stuff. And the media, Washington State media, is not covering this. And average citizens aren't diving that deep into a bill. Again, House Bill 1178. The sponsors of it: Goodman, Hackney, Simmons, Tara Simmons, not a surprise there, and Peterson, spending valuable time going through our existing sentencing enhancements and crossing them out. I mean, it's true. When you look at, I cannot wrap my mind around lawmakers, especially lawmakers on a public safety committee, prioritizing or even thinking about anything like this. And you know who I thought of when I saw this? And again, I'm so grateful that Representative Graham called me yesterday and tipped me off to this because I had not heard about it. There's so many bad bills out there. I immediately thought of Wendy Traynor. We covered this case 2 years ago now, I think, down in Pierce County, where a guy named Josh Ellis had been handed this like sweetheart plea deal despite confessing to shooting his estranged girlfriend in the back of the head. And prosecutors didn't even charge him with a firearm enhancement. They didn't even include that because they gave him this sweetheart deal. And so now they want to kind of make that the norm. Like, oh, no firearm enhancements for you. It's like, if you do get one, you can earn good time on it. And so I actually, before the show today, I called Wendy Traynor's family. I talked to her aunt just to kind of tip her off to this because I didn't want her to hear me talk about it on the show and they didn't know about this bill and feel like absolutely blindsided by it. It's just absolutely disgusting stuff. And then on top of all of that, because one of the things I'd point out is the hypocrisy. Again, that's a theme of today's show, right? Hypocrisy. That you have this state, a governor now, a former governor, who they are so proud of the gun control laws they've put forth. They are so proud of the laws they put forth that make things more difficult for law-abiding gun owners and haven't done anything to reduce crimes committed with a gun. I mean, just yesterday, this is honest to God on Governor Inslee, former Governor Inslee's Instagram account. He's posting all these sort of, he's calling them evergreen moments, all these things he's bragging about that he's accomplished. One of them up on his Instagram right now is preventing gun violence. And he brags about, he has all these headlines on there. Oh, you know, banning AR-15 style rifles, banning high capacity magazines and ghost guns, universal background checks, extreme risk protection orders. So all these things over 12 years, he says 30 days, 30 highlights to celebrate 12 years of progress in Washington. Think about that. 12 years of progress. Did we see progress on gun crimes over 12 years? No. Did we see progress on reducing the number of shootings or individual instances of shots fired in 12 years? No. During the 12 years that Jay Inslee was in office and Bob Ferguson was attorney general, prioritizing a ban on high-capacity magazines, universal background checks, extreme risk protection orders, ban on sale of semi-automatic rifles, creation of the Office of Firearm Safety, open carry regulations, unsafe storage liability. They did all of that in 12 years. Homicides doubled. The instances of shooting and shots fired are through the roof. So all these gun control bills they did, now he's celebrating it as 12 years of progress on guns? When no such progress has been made, and at the very same time, Democrats in Olympia today are pushing a bill to ease punishments for people who use a gun to commit a crime. People like Josh Ellis, who is so mad that his girlfriend decided to leave him, that he followed her across the country to the apartment she just moved into, moving boxes, still littering the entryway. And he shot her in the back of the head and he left her for dead. Those are the kind of people. The guy who killed Wendy Traynor. Those are the kind of people Democrats in Olympia are fighting for today. Not Wendy. Not other people who are the actual victim of gun violence. For as much as the left talks about and preaches about preventing gun violence, why aren't they in Olympia standing up for people like Wendy? Why are they standing up for people like Josh Ellis, who took a gun and shot her in the back of the head? That's whose side they're on? It can't be spun any other way. We'll invite Roger Goodman on the show. He's been on the show before. There's no way to spin this other than it being a pro-crime bill. The absolute hypocrisy of spending 12 years talking about your progress on gun control and gun crimes. Yeah, the only thing you have made progress on is controlling guns. Controlling the ability of people to purchase and use guns lawfully. But when it comes to the people who are actually using guns to commit crimes, you haven't done anything in that regard. You've made it worse, and then you're trying to lessen their sentences when they actually are prosecuted. How anyone keeps voting for this, I can't understand. It makes no sense to me. I don't know how to wake people up. I understand that this is so in the weeds. I mean, it's already 1 o'clock. We're not even a third of the way through the show. I probably just spent 30 minutes on that. I understand that not every newscast in Seattle has 30 minutes to spend breaking down a single bill in Olympia. But this is the kind of stuff that they're pushing constantly. Trying to reduce punishments for sexually motivated crimes, and they say they're the party of, like, believing women? Trying to make it less bad for gang members to recruit kids to commit crimes for them? What is going on? Again, I hate to put it on. It's intentional. It has to be intentional. I don't know any other explanation than they're trying to make you feel so unsafe that you crawl to the government to help you feel safe. And you'll increase taxes, you'll do whatever they want because you just feel so unsafe. And they're the ones that made you feel that way in the first place. It's just crazy stuff. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action. Lord knows I got a lot of it today. At future42.org. Just crazy stuff. So that's one that we need to raise holy hell about. There's a lot of bad bills this session, but that is certainly at the top of my list. All right, we'll get to our segment Unbelievable next. Local school districts melting down over Donald Trump. No surprise there. First Mark Insurance, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. I get endless stories from undivided viewers and listeners who have had fantastic. I mean, Daryl was in yesterday. And he was saying, I don't know if you heard this story, Nicole, but he said that because he's a veteran, you know, they reached out to First Mark when they bought a house, but First Mark told them, hey, you should actually call USAA because they're going to give you, we can't beat that. As a veteran, that's who you should go with. So they just turned away his business as a veteran because they knew that he'd get better rates with someone else. Like, is that not an honest company?
Because they care.
Because they care. Come on, people. And they might be able to save you money. Spencer says they saved him $1,600 a year. Chad says they saved him $100 a month, so like $1,200 a year. Who couldn't use an extra $1,600 a year in their pocket? So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, not a surprise, not really unbelievable, I guess, at this point, that public schools are losing their ever-loving mind in Washington State over Donald Trump, but we'll talk about it in our segment Unbelievable nonetheless. I guess it really is unbelievable. It's just like, it just happens so much, you know? So let's start in the Olympia School District, shall we? Where, I mean, I don't know how they'll get by. Honestly, I think that we should give Olympia teachers who are part of the union just the rest of the year off. It's not like they're teaching kids anything anyway. They're just indoctrinating them. So actually, you know what? Those kids might be better off if they take the rest of the school year off. I think they might be better off not going to school than going to school in the Olympia Public School District. So the Olympia Education Association, they are going to have some daily one-hour conversations. Well, they had this leading up to, and now we're seeing other things going on. But so leading up to the inauguration, please join NEA aspiring educators for daily one-hour conversations exploring all the ways members can prepare for a second Trump administration. Wow, great. So on January 15th, the theme was how to prepare for a second Trump administration. January 16th, the one-hour-long seminar was defending LGBTQ plus civil rights in public schools. Not to be outdone, the Friday, January 17th session was keeping ICE out of schools. Ah, no immigration enforcement here. They don't even want regular cops in their schools, so that doesn't surprise me very much. Oh, and then, of course, January 18th, fighting vouchers and charter privatization, because Donald Trump is in support of some elements of school choice. And so they're like, we can't have that. We can't have kids and families having options. So we just need to vilify and fight against the ability of a family to choose where their taxpayer money is spent when it comes to educating their own kids. The video hasn't gone up yet, but there was a school board meeting where apparently they were crying. There were tears shed over Donald Trump. So when we find that video, when it's posted, we'll have to play that on the show. But that pales in comparison, truly. Pales in comparison to what happened yesterday, which was not only Inauguration Day, but MLK Jr. Day, at a rally at a Seattle public school. This is unbelievable. Our friend Jonathan Cho has details.
So I'm at Seattle's Garfield High School today for the MLK rally. Everything was cool until I noticed a massive banner that reads, "We rise against Project 2025. Now, for those of you who don't know, liberals say it's a set of conservative policy proposals that would also expand presidential powers. President Trump repeatedly disavowed Project 2025 after backlash over some of its more radical ideas, but it's been weaponized by the left and is used to rile up the base. Fine, that's politics today in our polarized nation, but it was actually shocking to see this at a public high school and at an MLK event. Now, if you hate Trump and conservatives, I'm sure it was great. But what about kids who are independents or lean conservative? Imagine going to school in this type of environment. On top of this, it appears the International League of People Struggle was a sponsor. ILPS is a global network of organizations and movements that's inspired by communist and Marxist ideology. Many of its members have marched against Israel. There's obviously more to it than that, but that's the gist of it. And then there's the controversial Palestinian flag. Depending who you ask, it's a symbol of the fight for freedom or terrorism. Point is, why is Seattle Public Schools allowing this flag to be included in the program? Where's the Israeli flag? SPS has some explaining to do. Why hijack an MLK Day to push this type of one-sided messaging on kids?
That's insane. It's one thing for teachers or students to participate in a march as they did yesterday outside of school grounds. It's another thing entirely for a public school that our taxpayer money is helping to fund, for them to have a rally where they're depicting fighting back against Trump and Project 2025 and the resistance and the Palestinian flag, and as Jonathan Cho so aptly pointed out, Israeli flag nowhere to be found. Completely inappropriate. The fact that we can't, and there's no, who's going to hold them accountable? No one's holding them accountable. I would say 80% of the parents are probably like, yay, that's awesome. And I mean, it's not, Seattle's not a monolith. It's pretty close, but it's not. And sending your kid, imagine being a parent who's conservative and you just want your kid to learn, and they're having to go to a rally in their school, at their school, where they're talking about Trump and Project 2025 and fighting back and Palestine and resistance and all this. That's nuts. And Nicole, you reached out to both the Seattle Public School District and the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, right?
Yes, I did. I have not heard back yet.
Shocking. Because there's no one, like Chris Reichdahl, if this was before the election, he might, because he's got something at stake. But you guys just put him in back. You didn't. I know you didn't. But just put him back in for a third term. Or is it a fourth term? Third term. So he's like, I'm good. There's really nothing I can do at this point to lose my job. That's how he feels. Because there isn't. He was reelected despite failing test scores, like failing on every metric, declining enrollment, declining participation and attendance. And he still got his job back. So he's like, at this point, screw you guys. I don't answer to anyone. You want to have a pro-Palestine, anti-Trump rally in a public school district? By all means. You think for 1 second, just imagine a school district. If a school district in our state had a pro-Trump rally with hundreds of students in attendance in the school, or an anti-Palestine or pro-Israel rally, rather. Can you imagine how that would go over like a fart in church? Is that the saying? Yeah, like a fart in church.
No, it is.
I think that is a saying. And you can bet that Chris Reichdahl would condemn it. Democrats would condemn it. I would ask, why is it okay to do the opposite? But it's not okay. It's only okay because there's not enough people to push back against it. Because a lot of people agree with it, which is just wild. None of those parents who think that that's okay would be okay if the shoe was on the other foot and if it was a pro-Trump thing. Not a single one of them. And they don't understand, again, hypocrisy, the theme of the entire show. They don't understand the hypocrisy there. They have no moral compass. It's completely driven by their own political ideology. In the Seattle Public School District, this isn't a surprise to them. They're perfectly fine with this stuff. They encourage this stuff. This isn't even the worst, most political thing that's happened in the Seattle Public School District. Not even close. I mean, they're packed full of anti-Semitic teachers who still have their jobs despite very concerning behavior. So yeah, oh my gosh, see, can you just play the beginning of that show video? Just because, for people who are watching, doesn't the banner behind her look friendly?
So I'm at Seattle's Garfield High School today for the MLK.
It's just got some flowers on it. Got some cartoon people. Like, we're happy and screw Trump. Just like, oh my God. Take your kids out of public schools. At this point, I'm just sort of like, if you're a sane parent who doesn't want somebody else's political agenda pushed on your kid, I mean, definitely not on this side of the Cascades. Don't send them to a public school. There's some other schools where I know this stuff isn't happening. I know it's not widespread in every single school district in the state, but it happens enough where it's clearly concerning. It's clearly a pattern. And I'm going to call it right now. I don't think we ever get a response on this from OSBI. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think we ever get a response from this from SPS, who pay a person with our money to talk to the media and answer media requests. But of course, they got to filter those. Oh, did that reporter vote for Donald Trump? Yeah. No, don't respond. Oh, is that reporter questioning anything we do? Yeah. Don't respond. And they get away with it. Tell me how we should hold them accountable. Tell me how we can hold them accountable. Because I'm out of ideas. It's wild stuff. You might say it's unbelievable. Okay, if you're thinking about selling your home in 2025, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy, but the first thing that they're going to do is just make sure that the whole process is transparent for you. Because, I mean, it's a big undertaking to sell your home, and I think given the state of the market, understandable if you feel a little hesitant. So first things first, what I would do, go to sellwithwes.com, plug in your address on their free home value calculator. It'll tell you how much your home is worth. And then you can reach out to Wes, get a free market analysis, and he'll just sort of tell you, hey, here's where the market is at. Here's how comparable homes are doing. Here's what you might be able to expect. And then you can talk to him about maybe some of the bigger things that really have you worried and stressed out. Like, hey, I need to like upgrade my kitchen or else I'm not going to get enough money for this home. Well, Wes can help you with that. He can even help you pay for it up front and manage the projects. I mean, you're not going to find that a lot of other places. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to some national news. Not that we didn't have a lot of national news on the show already. The Hitler stuff. I'm done with it. I mean, this might be the last, like, Hitler comparison story I ever do on the show because I just don't care anymore. And I think more people don't care.
It's like, pretty exhausting.
Your Hitler stuff, it's just... And it goes to, like, we call everything racist. Now nothing's racist, and that's not a good place to be either. I played that clip of that racist kid at the end of the show yesterday. So that's not a good place to be either, but that's what you're doing with, like, you know, you called everyone Hitler. You called Trump Hitler a bajillion times, and then for some reason you, like, sat next to him while he took the oath of office. Yeah, you really thought he was Hitler, didn't you? So Elon Musk, who, is he autistic? Is that the... Has he admitted to being autistic, or does the internet just call him autistic?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
I'm not sure if he's actually autistic, or if that's what to say. Fair to say he's awkward. Oh, I think that's very fair to say. He's clearly a socially awkward kind of guy. So he is giving a speech during the whole Trump festivities, and he is, well, I'll just play the clip here for you so you can kind of see, and I'll explain to people on the podcast what's going on.
You know, there are elections that come and go. Some elections are, you know, important, some are not, but this one this one really mattered, and I just want to say thank you for making it happen. Thank you. My heart goes out to you.
All right, so if you watch that,
yes, he has Asperger's. He's confirmed.
Oh, he does have Asperger's. Okay, confirmed, which is like high functioning form of autism, right? Which would make sense that he's high functioning because, like, you know, Mars and all that stuff. If you just watch that video without any sound, I'm like, what is he doing? Like, yeah, I get it. That he very clearly is like, it looks like a Nazi salute. But when you listen to it in context and say he's saying, my heart goes out to you. And he's like clearly grabbing his chest where his heart is and sort of sending it out to the crowd. Then a rationally thinking person would be like, oh, you know, he's just awkward. And that's sort of his gesture or whatever, like kind of looks like a Nazi salute. But I have a brain and I can think for myself and in context, not a big deal. Well, the media doesn't have a brain. The media doesn't want you to think for itself. Maybe the media does have a brain, but they use it for bad instead of good. And it was insane. I mean, even PBS NewsHour. Aren't we funding PBS? PBS billionaire Elon Musk gave what appeared to be a fascist salute Monday while making a speech at the post-inauguration celebration for President Donald Trump at the Capital One Arena. And then it says, this is crazy. So they quote him, right? Some elections are important, some are not. You just heard that. But this one really mattered. And I just want to say thank you for making it happen, Musk said, before putting his hand on his chest and then raising it in a salute that appeared similar to the Sieg Heil used by Nazis at their victory rallies. And they quote him, it is thanks to you that the future of civilization is assured. You know what they left out?
Yeah.
They completely cut out.
Oh, my heart to
my
you.
My heart goes, they completely cut out PBS NewsHour. The part of his quote, they just, sliced right out of the middle and put everything else that made that video that nullified their whole argument that it was a Nazi salute. That's PBS NewsHour. If you can't trust PBS NewsHour, who can you trust? And then all the media was just going wild. I mean, I'm not going to read every headline, but AP, Reuters, Forbes, I mean, Vanity Fair, New York Times, they were all having headlines that did not capture the clear context.
One of my favorites is Vanity Fair, which says Elon Musk sure isn't denying that his inaugural gesture was a Nazi salute because he said, this is getting ridiculous.
Because he made fun of you and he's not going to justify your ridiculousness. Yeah. He doesn't have to.
It's not like he said, that was what it was.
But it's like to the left in the media. Did you not see that the last time you tried to use the Hitler comparisons, it didn't work out? Did you not see that, like, the person you tried to use them against repeatedly is now the president of the United States? So what do you think you gain? Are you just trying it again? Like, hey, that tactic that didn't work, let's try it again against Elon Musk?
They obviously didn't think Hitler was, or Trump was Hitler, because they wouldn't have been, you know, having tea with him before the inauguration.
Right. Like, I'm sorry, and I would want this for America. I'm big on, you know, the whole transfer of power, but if we had someone who was legit Hitler, who wanted to like carry out mass murder in America and have us be a white, blonde, blue-eyed race, even though I'd survive that, right? I would want the U.S. government and the military to stop them from taking power. And if you actually believed that was happening, you wouldn't be standing up there smiling, singing along with Carrie Underwood to God Bless America and all these things. Like, give me a break. You guys know that. It's just the Nazi stuff. And again, there are really hateful people out there. There are hateful people who say hateful things. You know, we played one of them on the show yesterday. There is true racism and bigotry in this country. But the left, in what we're supposed to believe is their effort to get people to take that stuff seriously, has almost made it irrelevant because you have completely stolen the meaning away from all those very powerful words that should be reserved to only the worst of the worst people and instances of hate on our planet. So congratulations for undermining your own mission. All right, I want to jump ahead to our daily subscriber show poll if we can't subscriber. Subscriber. Daily subscriber show poll. I can talk good. I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X about this whole executive order to end birthright citizenship. Now, I added a caveat to the question because I wanted to gauge your support of this regardless of whether it's constitutional. So I said, set aside whether it's constitutional or will withstand legal challenges. Do you support President Trump's executive order to end birthright citizenship? Yes. No, or only temporarily. Again, we're not talking about feasibility here. We're not talking about survivability in a court of law. Nicole, what say you? Yes, no, or only temporarily?
I guess only temporarily, because I do think that that is what makes us, a part of what makes America great, right? Is
like,
that
what?
We are, I mean, that's just, I mean, we say it in our, and you know, we are God-given. What is the saying?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
Endowed by our creator,
you're certain born. Unalienable rights.
Thank you.
Among them, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right.
But it doesn't guarantee you.
Right. But it is kind of saying God-given, as in mm-hmm. you were born here, so you were given those rights because you yeah. were born here. So I don't know. I think that is part of what makes us great. And so I'm okay with it. But I also think that's determined by closed borders and getting in here illegally. And then, oh, like, guess what? My baby is born just like your dad or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do think maybe temporarily to make sure that things are as they are supposed to be mm-hmm. because we just got out of an open border situation yeah. and then get it back. And not to say that people that aren't born here you know, can't figure it out and they can be rightfully born here and get their citizenship.
Yeah, so. I wish there was a way to narrow it, right? To stop the clear abuses of it.
So if you came here legally and had a baby, that baby gets citizenship.
Well, yeah, if you're here on mm-hmm. a if you're here on a work visa or a student visa or something like that. Like, there are people here on work visas and they're here for years and years and years, and you're telling me that if they're here for years and years and years working their way toward lawful citizenship, doing everything right, paying taxes, working and all that, and they have a kid,
for
like,
sure.
Their kid has to be, you know, that just isn't right.
No.
But yeah, you do have people who you could have two, and it does take a man and a woman to create a child, just in case that has become less apparent over the years. You could have a man and a woman, both illegal, go over the border, have a baby, now their child's a U.S. citizen. That makes no sense. You right. know, this happens in some European countries more so, where they'll come over pregnant on a tourist visa, and then all of a sudden, baby, now you got a baby here. So if you could find a way, it's hard though, because the 14th Amendment is just pretty simple in the way that it's written, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you carve out exceptions to a constitutional amendment, but most people say yes, that they would support fully doing away with birthright citizenship. Only 12% say temporarily. Will says it's abused too much. We need a definitive process. The 14th doesn't spell it out as it was for post-Civil War, right, for slavery. Congress should pass something that gives everyone a clear idea of how you become a citizen. Until then, ban the loopholes. Yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a way to ban the loopholes without just doing the route of a constitutional amendment. Let me see. E says, whilst I agree the anchor baby option should be banned, if the parents were born in the U.S. and the child is born in the U.S., that should stand. But if the parents are born in the U.S., they're a citizen. And so their child is a citizen, too. So that wouldn't be relevant to birthright citizenship. Y says, I voted no because that is how I'm a U.S. citizen. It's difficult. It's a difficult issue, though. I don't like when people come just give birth to have that citizenship, or if they're here illegally. Ideally, you give the birthright citizenships to legal immigrants who have residency established. But how do we prove that? Yeah, I agree with that, like we were saying earlier. So, Julie, 100%. No other country that I know of gives you that opportunity.
Oh, there are. There are
some
other countries. Yeah.
What country, if you could have a kid that would have, they'd still be American, but if you birthed them there, they would also have citizenship
Australian.
In that country. Of course, I knew it'd be Australia. Yeah. Mike's would be whatever country has the best hunting. That would be his. Whatever country has the best hunting.
So he can get
like
in.
Let's yeah, yeah, so we can get the
get
sort of
licenses.
Yeah. Let me see. Permit. Ollie Rohde, I remember learning about birthright citizenship in the fifth grade. I thought it was the stupidest policy I'd ever heard of. It's a loophole that needs to be closed up. So yeah, a lot
and
of support.
There are many, like Australia being one, Argentina,
well,
Albania,
go.
Belize,
Nicole's
Bermuda, Brazil.
Planning her Australian birth already.
Canada. There's many.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, when Trump says it, he said, we're one of the only ones, and he acted like we were the only one. But I looked
not
that
true.
Up a few months ago when he said that.
Ah, see, fact-checking Donald Trump. You see, fact-checking Donald Trump. All right. Good stuff. We'll get to our comments and our closing sanity check. Coming up first, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having another one of their Know Your Risk live webinars. This one is going to focus specifically on the new administration, give a preview of 2025, look at Trump's economic policies and how that might impact your retirement portfolio. They'll also do a full reveal of how Bulwark Capital uses their risk management strategy to adjust to a volatile world. You do not want to miss this 2025 preview webinar, totally free, easy to sign up. Zach's going to have a ton to cover. You can ask him questions if you want. Sign up at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Look, you only get one retirement. If you're like me, you've already have a planned out. I'm going to rescue old dogs from shelters. I'm going to live in the middle of nowhere, and I'm not going to talk to another human being unless I choose to. Nicole can come out occasionally. I'll talk to her. That's fine. But I've got that retirement planned out. We know what we need to make it happen. I'm not going to put that dream of mine at risk. It's too valuable. So get a second opinion if you haven't already. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Okay, comments. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Love it. You rarely hear about the NGOs who are active in aiding and abetting illegal immigration. The DOJ should focus on holding these groups accountable. Their impact is massive. I agree. If you're an NGO or a nonprofit, so you get nonprofit status from our government, which saves you money on taxes, and you're aiding and abetting illegal immigrants, you should have your nonprofit status revoked because you're aiding people in breaking federal law. So why would you not have your nonprofit status revoked? There's a million examples of that. That makes no sense. Yeah. On the J6ers, were people mad about my J6 takes?
Some people were, yes.
Don't be mad at me, guys.
Maybe it's just the harshness, because I think that most people agree with you. I think most people think if you assaulted a cop.
I was harsh?
A cop. At the beginning, you said, Trump party's over. Trump love fest is over.
It's my job, guys.
I don't like them.
You want a Trump love fest, you turn on Fox News.
But I think overall you're right. But I also think there's an element of that they got these unrealistic sentences. Yeah. And now they've been punished so severely that he's just like, you know what? You've done your time. Yeah. You've paid your crime or paid for it. I'm done. We're letting this all go.
Yeah.
Because it was handled so poorly.
I agree. I think it's the difference between a commutation and a pardon. I think there should have been a little more selective nature in that. You're still out of prison, but yeah, you assaulted a police officer. You're going to have to carry that baggage around for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
One of my other concerns is that now, till the end of time, not that Democrats needed to excuse violent behavior from their own side, but now they'll be like, well, the J6ers, they got pardoned, you know? So why would our people get arrested? So
well, I also think that even by, so the pardon versus commune, but the pardons, so even if they were pardoned and they should have that on their record. If you assaulted a cop, probably, you know, down the street, whatever. If you actually got charged for it, then, you know, you might be able to explain yourself to an employer.
Yeah.
But as soon as you say J6, because of what it has been turned into, I'm guessing they are not getting jobs.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's just what that's become and what's been added to the charges.
Yeah.
Even if you've done your time, some of these guys have already done their time. They've already done their home confinement. They've been on probation for a few years now. And I just think that that's where that comes from is let's just move on from this.
I do agree with the pardons for people whose only crime was entering the Capitol. And there is video of police being like, okay. And then walking through what do you call it? The
barriers.
Fences, where they're supposed to walk. You know what I mean? Like in an orderly fashion.
Right.
The idea that any of those people would get jail time or prison time is insane. I mean, the left does that all the time. They storm buildings. They take over buildings.
All
they
the
burn
time.
Buildings down.
And
they're not getting in trouble for it.
I think that the overall, and I don't know what's in these people's hearts. So I hope that when they going to charge these people, that they actually kind of looked into their behaviors and investigated it more. But I don't know. I don't think anybody thought they were going to actually stop an election. I think they wanted the scene, but I don't know. It's intent versus, don't know.
I mean, there were some bad actors there, like the whole hang Mike Pence. There were bad actors there. And again, I'm not going to sacrifice my moral clarity by being like, because if you replace them with somebody else who was there for a different task, like BLM, then people would feel differently. So it's always like, you got to not that I'm holier than thou and I'm not trying to be sanctimonious, sorry if it's coming across as sanctimonious, but I think it's good every once in a while to just tear yourself out of the political echo chamber we all live in and just look at it so that next time something happens you can stand on your moral high ground and be like, no, I was consistent there. Like I was with attacks on the media, whether it was left-wing or Donald Trump supporters attacking the media, I've always been consistent on that. But like, God forbid I'm attacked at CHOP. You think the other news outlets in town were consistent and like, oh, they were attacking reporters? No, they didn't care. Some of them thought I deserved it. It's just crazy stuff.
Yeah.
All right. The analog detectorist. I don't care what you think about J6. No one deserves 4+ years for trespassing. I agree with that. And I've never said they do. But I think 4 years is a good sentence if you assaulted a cop unprovoked.
Really?
Are you saying that if a leftist...
Well, it depends on if you actually went to hurt a cop. Absolutely.
Hit him with a...
Absolutely.
A piece of metal.
Absolutely.
A metal bar.
I'm not sure what went into all of these charges. I think some of these charges were, you know, pushed him out of the way with a gate and whatever it was, you know. I mean, you have this crowd behind you and you're just kind of, I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't think it should be a blanket thing. I think each case should have got its own.
Yeah, intentional assault on a police officer. If I got Antifa, like the one who threw the improvised explosive device at the female officer up on Capitol Hill and she's on crutches, like, I'm sorry, that's probably, I think you should go to prison for 10 years.
Yes.
Like, I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
On guns, Melinda Cito, this bill needs to be cleaned up. Too many coming here. I don't think that's on guns. Melinda Cito, too many coming here, have their baby now and have a family member here, talking about birthright citizenship.
Yep.
Janine Peterson, I swear they're pushing for more violence so they can pull more shenanigans while we run for our lives. They want to disarm people. They want the government to have to be the entity to keep everyone safe. So you'll agree to raise your tax prices, all of that. Midnight says DAs drop gun charges anyway in the plea deal so these criminals can walk free in a few months. This just makes it even easier to do that. Yeah. And we shared an example. Nick Brown, picking up where Bob Ferguson left off, Todd Welch says, the governor cannot sweep money from another elected office, can he? He can recommend to the state legislature. It is A.G. Brown's job to plead his case to the legislature. I believe you're correct. I don't know if Bob did it before he left. That's what I'm not sure about. Because it is up to independently elected officials to manage their own office. So whether this is a recommendation or if he swept that money somewhere else, in his final act, I'm not sure. If that's a good question, Todd. We'll look into it. Scott says, stop wasting my tax dollars on this crap and pay attention to your own state. Yeah, I agree. I agree. They need to pay attention to what's happening here. There's a million things he can do. I do not want another attorney general with 4 years of Trump derangement syndrome. We have too many things going on. Okay. Let's see. Where am I at, Nicole? Am I at a closing
stand? Did you want to talk about my...
Oh my God, trip? Yes, I'm so sorry. Tell us about your trip. Are we still good? We're 1 hour and 34 minutes in.
Wow, I don't know. I guess we still got people watching.
Are we still streaming on X?
Sorry, guys, if you need to go to get back to work or something.
I hope our X stream didn't stop.
Nope, it didn't.
Oh, good job, Nicole.
The trip was amazing. I mean, it was brutally cold.
Cole hates the cold.
And we really put in the work because... you know, I went with John Curley and Gina, and John Curley was trying to report from there from Cairo Radio, but they wouldn't support him getting a press badge or like going for them. So he called in. But isn't that funny? It's a major news organization.
He couldn't get a press badge for it?
They would not let him represent Cairo Radio there.
That's interesting. Yeah, so, I wonder if it's because he's an opinion host or they didn't want to pay the fee.
Because they just didn't support it. They didn't want to pay, but they didn't want to support it. And so then they made him sign a thing saying they weren't responsible if anything happened there to him and whatever. Anyway.
God.
So we put in the work when we got there. We stood in line for, I don't know, 9 hours. It was so cold.
Oh.
And, you know, cold's not my jam.
It's not.
So so that was brutal, but it was worth it. Once we got in there, that was exciting. And like I said, that excitement is just, you know, it's intoxicating.
You were in the
for the rally.
Room for the, what do you call them? The YMCA?
Oh, my gosh.
Village people? So when did you realize...
It's such a surreal thing.
When did you realize that the village people were going to come out? Once he teased it?
He teased it, but I had seen that on some of the, little flyers thing.
Yeah.
Like, this might happen. So I knew that they were going to be there. I did not think that he would stay on stage with them and kind of do his little dance.
Smiling.
But it's such a surreal thing. I mean, the gay... kind of anthem.
They are all gay, right?
I believe so. The YMCA thing.
I don't know if you put on a uniform costume like that if you're not.
Yeah. And I just thought it was exciting and cute and fun. Yeah. And it was, Gina was just so much fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
She really did fit. John and I were all in. We were like going to get that girl in that stadium, whatever we had to do for that. And so we did kind of sneak in the front of the line and just walked in like we owned the place and it worked. And security was interesting because they did take our phone numbers and say like, oh, you're confirmed and you get to go in. But then they never really checked that. They never checked phones or tickets or anything.
But you went through a metal detector and stuff, right?
It was TSA.
TSA, yeah, that makes sense. So it was like, had to be.
Yeah, so they, and Yeah, we got in there. It was kind of, what was a little disappointing was the whole third section of the top of their arena was pretty much empty. And that was because they didn't let people in. They just stopped letting people in. So then all of the news reports, NBC, we have a friend that was left a little bit early and he walked outside and he's like, they're all out here. There's thousands of people still trying to get in. And all of the agencies were reporting that the empty
seats were God, they're disingenuous.
Yeah, but it was really rude that they didn't just keep letting people in. Why not? That was really
I don't know
silly.
Maybe they were trying to get started and it just took longer to process people than you thought.
I
Who
don't
knows?
Know
the whole thing
but
is
that
fishy.
Was really
was
fishy.
It cold enough to not hold the inauguration outside?
So I did not think so. I think that
and she's literally wearing a heated blanket right now.
I am. It was cold. So the day before the day of the rally was not as cold as the day of the inauguration. The day of the inauguration though, I mean, I think so. I mean, I'm convinced it was a security issue because security was really, I thought I would see cops everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, John says, oh, they were like, you didn't recognize them, but there weren't as many cops as I thought. However, they did have that whole area blocked down. Yeah. It was really hard. We tried to get to the from the White House to the Capitol on Inauguration Day. We couldn't do it. Like they had streets blocked off and we would have had it. We kept having to go around and go through different securities. It was crazy the way they had it locked down.
Yeah.
But no, we were all outside anyway. Yeah. I mean, they said, we're doing this so you're not outside. And then we were all outside anyway.
Because how many hours would you say you guys waited in line between you and Gina? And
oh, God.
Like, she got in line at like 5 a.m., right?
She got in line at 4:45, I think.
In the cool.
And then we joined her when we got over there. We stayed a little further away, so it took us some time to get over there. But we were there by like 7. And then, she was there the next day. She watched it. She watched it from these stands right outside of the Capitol on her phone.
Yeah.
They didn't have screens out there, which was
That's
also kind of tacky. And then I watched it from a watch party at a hotel. But I did watch Trump leave the White House from the little tea with the Bidens and like leave and go and saw him in his little car and whatever. Yeah. So I'm like, well, at least I got to see him on the inauguration day, right?
Just wild. I agree with you. It's a security issue for sure.
I think it was security. And then I also think maybe, you know, the Melania's, I mean, those poor people standing outside, I mean, snot just dripping out of their noses. And so I do think there was probably an element of we don't want Melania Trump with snot hanging out of her nose.
Yeah, that's possible.
And
I wouldn't want to stand
other
in the cold
old
for that
people
long.
Like taking that chance.
Yeah.
So maybe for the safety of those people, I don't know, but I think
maintain
security.
Their elegance. That makes sense too. I wouldn't want to stand out in something that cold.
Right.
Yeah.
Singing in that cold.
Joe Biden would freeze to death.
Yeah.
He's got skin and bones possibility. Right now.
I mean,
I'm glad you went.
It was painfully cold. Like your skin did hurt in the cold if you didn't have gloves on. So you would have had a bunch of, you know, Melania Trump out there with gloves. And I mean, you couldn't not have gloves. So.
Yeah. But January in D.C. is always cold.
Always.
It's always been cold for the inauguration. So the thing, I don't think it passes the smell test. But
I don't think so.
Still, I'm glad you got to go.
Thank you for
making sure Gina, you know, was able to sort of navigate. I know she also helped wait in line and stuff. So it was just a cool story.
She did. And
love it. We're happy
Michael,
to have you back.
Michael Baumgartner hadn't offered us the tickets, even though we didn't really get to use them, we wouldn't have decided to go. And it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I mean, it's pretty memorable. It's pretty special to be a part of. So,
well, we missed you.
And we saw no protesters. I mean,
good.
I heard that there was a couple on the outskirts and whatever, but really there was not. It was just a lot of happy people. So.
I saw a video of Tucker Carlson just walking through downtown D.C. without any security guards. I was like, oh, that's a bad idea. But nobody harassed him. Everybody's like, Tucker. It was just such a good vibe. So
it was great.
All right, Nicole. Cool. Thank you. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So, of course, Donald Trump was signing all these executive orders, and one of the executive orders he has on immigration is designating the drug cartel as international terrorists, which to me is a no-brainer. I mean, they're clearly engaged in the mass murder of Americans, and so, as you know, opening them up and labeling them as a terrorist organization, as a foreign terrorist organization, it kind of opens up, you know, use of the military maybe and some backdoor ways to deal with the drug cartel, so to speak. Donald Trump was asked about that.
President Trump, if the cartels are now going to be seen as foreign terror organizations, would you think about ordering U.S. Special Forces into Mexico to take them out?
Could happen. Stranger things have happened.
Did you see his little smirk at the end? Stranger things have happened. Closes his book. That's a yes. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's extra, extra, extra overtime edition. Maybe we don't even do a show tomorrow, honestly. We did 2 hours today.
No. You would never allow it.
No, no, no. No skipping days. Yeah, welcome back, Nicole. I'm glad you didn't freeze your toesies off. That's about it. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. What else? Oh, yeah, if you haven't subscribed to support the show already, we would really appreciate it if you do. $5 a month, it helps us do this job full-time, which we love doing, and which we think is a valuable service to the people of this fine state and this nation. $5 a month, you can sign up, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com.